Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
I am absolutely delighted that we have an incredible guest in a studio. We're going to be speaking to Rawan Osman, who's a Syrian-born Middle East commentator who has lived through the Syrian war, become an incredibly clear, grounded voice. And you might have had the privilege of hearing her yesterday afternoon on Simon's show, where they had a conversation. We will be talking a little bit more and maybe doing a bit of a deep dive into some of the issues, her experience here in South Africa, what she has observed, because sometimes, as I say, it is easier to read the label from outside the bottle. In fact, it's impossible to read the label sometimes inside the bottle, from inside the bottle. So every now and then, it is great to get that perspective. Rawan was born in Syria, raised between Damascus and the Bekaa Valley, and grew up in a world where anti-Semitism wasn't just common, but it in fact was normal. As she has put it, the word Jew became synonymous with monster. But things changed, and that's what we want to talk about. We want to talk about the journey, which is maybe sometimes uncomfortable, but it's inspiring, and it's deeply relevant to us right now. A very good morning, and welcome to the Morning Mayhem.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
A great pleasure, and I do want to apologize for Mukundi's attitude on behalf of Chai FM, because, yeah.
They were lovely, trying to do the best they can.
Okay, good. So that's awesome. Let's start off, because I love words, and words are important. Today there's the Cambridge Word of the Year is, what was it,
Parasocial,
that's the word. So words are really important. Mm. For you, the word Jew meant something very, very significant growing up. And I'd love to look at what it meant then, what it meant now, means now, and how everything changes along the way.
Again, thank you for having me. Indeed, words have meanings. And yes, it can pack an entire world. And it's funny that you asked me this. We're sitting in South Africa, that has been through an apartheid, and today the word apartheid is used so easily, just like genocide, etc. But let's stick with the word Jew for a moment. Indeed, growing up, the word Jew was synonymous with enemy. Right. Not necessarily monster, but enemy. And I have to emphasize that where I grew up in the Middle East, and until this day in most of the Arab world, and I say most of the Arab world because a few Arab countries signed or joined the Abraham Accords, mm-hmm. which is historical and offers new prospects and an alternative vision for the future. But in most of the Arab world, the word Jew is also used interchangeably with Zionist and Israeli. We make no distinction. And that means, or that is used to label the enemy. Now, this enemy is capable of anything and everything. The Jews look after one another, they plot, and they don't mind doing anything to achieve their goals. So this is how I grew up. And remember, I visited Damascus when I was a child because my father comes from the capital city. Mm-hmm. His parents lived there, but I grew up in Lebanon until I was 18. And Lebanon, or Lebanese society, was European-like. People were tolerant and open-minded, educated. Nevertheless, the Lebanese society hates until this day, the Jews. To be fair, not everybody does until this day, because thanks to social media and the internet, people could listen to the Israeli narrative that was for decades omitted from our existence. I should share with those listening that in most of the Arab world, embedded in constitutions and basic laws are anti-normalization laws and policies. Anti-normalization. Think
Which
about
is amazing.
That for a moment.
And we just accept, I mean, and the world accepts that. There's anti-normalization laws. You can't have a normal relationship with somebody, with Israel.
Not only that. Mm-hmm. This doesn't only apply to diplomatic ties and trade, etc. That forbids people-to-people contact between the citizens of those countries and Israelis, even if you meet them abroad. Concrete example, an Iraqi or a Lebanese see an Israeli in a pub in London or in Sydney. They are not allowed to speak to them. Why do you think these laws and policies were introduced since the 50s? I think it systematically dehumanized the Jews. It confuses the Israelis that after October 7th, the Arab world believed nonsense told by Hamas, such as we. In Hamas, we never targeted anybody, any civilians. Although we've seen the first group of hostages released included children and elderly.
Of course. And those at the Nova Festival, what were they if not civilians?
Not only that, I'll add to it. Today, and I will go back to explain what the word Jew means to me today. I visited Israel 16 times since October 7th. I've seen with my own eyes, and that was my top priority during my first visit, the victims, the people who were targeted. A woman wearing the hijab, wearing a headscarf, she's a Muslim. She's a mother of eight. She was shot dead. I met Aisha, the hostage that was in Gaza for more than 50 days. She was clearly underage. And wearing the hijab, clearly a Muslim, not a combatant, not a soldier. So the world believes all the lies, and many in the Arab world fail to sympathize with the Israelis, even though many knew that civilians were targeted, especially after they've seen the first group of hostages released. And I think the anti-normalization laws, the attitude in general, dehumanized the Israelis slash Jews slash Zionists because we have no contact with them. And bear in mind, for those listening, a very important detail. More than 850,000 Jews were uprooted from the Arab world. So there were no Jews living among us to contest whatever the state told us about.
Okay, so you couldn't really, because that's always the difference, is if you can be told something, but if you happen to know a Jew or you happen to know somebody from that religion or whatever it is that's being dehumanized or targeted, it's always very different. But if you never come across that person, then you have no way to assess that.
For example, let's take something concrete and talk about it. We were always told that the Jews don't care. They would kill women, children. In 1996, there was an attack in South Lebanon. And remember that Israel occupied South Lebanon. And we can explain why. In 1996, I watched the news, and gore was not as normalized as it is today. So as a child watching horrific footage emerging from South Lebanon, and the report said that the Israeli Air Force knew that this shelter belonged to the UN and it was home for women and children. Still, the Israeli Air Force targeted killing hundreds. So nobody was there to say, no, we Jews do not target women and children. Why would we? And why would we? And the sanctity of life, this idea was introduced by Judaism. Why would I know this now? Because I'm one of the very few lucky Arabs, to use this term, although I do not like it because our region is Arabized. Even in academia, we don't have a clear definition. What does an Arab mean? What is an Arab? But anyway, let's say that I come from the Arab culture and I'm one of the very few privileged, lucky ones who saw the truth. Living among the Jews in Europe, I made a discovery that they're normal. They don't bite. And my journey was very long, reading about the history of our region or relearning the history of our region and learning about Judaism and about Israel. not only changed my mind, but I grew fond of this people to the point where today, especially after October 7th, when I fight for Israel, I'm fighting for my own people.
Amazing that. But that's an incredible shift.
You don't mess with us, with my family.
That shift is, you know, because I often, because I write and I'm vocal about this as well, I often wonder how I do away with years and years of misinformation, disinformation, propaganda. I don't know how to clear that deck to be able to show, because I do think if even South African media has moved to the point that Jews and Israelis have been dehumanized. There isn't a real feeling about any pain that a Jew could have or Israelis could have experienced. How do you do away with that? You went on a journey and had to relearn the history that you thought you knew. Mm. How do we get a different message out there without asking people to invest in years of a journey?
I think today we have a very powerful tool, social media. Mm. Everybody has a phone. So even if you threaten to throw somebody in jail because they spoke to an Israeli, what are you going to do? Mm. They watched a reel on Instagram. They're going to pay a fine for that.
Yeah,
No way to control, to manage information. And although social media is flooded with misinformation and disinformation, everybody has a platform. The first time I went to Israel was after October 7th. I had 200 followers on Instagram, most of which I knew personally. Mm, mm. Today, I have around 300,000 followers across platforms, a very different followers. Like on TikTok, it's mostly Arabs. On Instagram, they're mostly Zionists who give me a pat on the back. But it's not only an echo chamber. There are haters, which is good, even on Instagram. So social media offers us the possibility to create and build our own platform. So you can, if you have a message, reach people out there. You just need to have the courage to speak up if you think a certain issue is important for you. To me, the Middle East conflict is paramount. That is my top priority. My son, as my son says it, my mom is obsessed with the Middle East.
As only a kid could do, to completely...
A teenager, but of course.
Yeah, what a waste of... Yeah, you're wasting your time, yeah. There are more important things to be worrying about.
But to me, it is paramount because it's personal. We have war trauma collectively, my parents' generation, their parents, and everyone in the Middle East, including the Israelis, we suffer from war trauma. We're all edgy, and we have a lot of potential. When we say the Middle East, people think of wars. That Middle East is where the wheel was invented, literally, literally. We have old civilizations. We have potential, a lot of potential. And yet, we're busy killing one another. And I do not think that Israel is the problem.
We are chatting with Rowan Osman. We are talking about her journey, her observations, and perspective on the Middle East and information in general.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.
I'm Howard Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem 101.9 Chai FM. Rowan Osman is in a studio and we're talking to her about information, misinformation, her journey, her observations. Does it ever occur to you, and I don't mean it ungenerously, but in a way that supporters of Israel and Jews are maybe a little bit, and I'm using the word lightly, pathetically, too grateful to you for what you're doing? It sounds like a strange question.
I think I know what you mean. Last May, I was part of a female European delegation that went to Israel for the first of many, I hope, in the future, for the first summit in order to fight the use of sexual violence as a weapon of war, not only in Israel, but it happened on October 7th. So from all over the world, experts spoke about the use of sexual violence, and this needs to be criminalized. This needs to stop. And I gave a speech at the Knesset. Can you imagine? I grew up in wars with Israel, hated the Jews and the Israelis, and now I'm given such an honor. It was overwhelming. So when I finished, people were in awe. They were amazed. And a member of the Knesset said, look around you. Wow. Thank you. Really, thank you. And I told her, don't thank me. Don't thank me. If the same happens to our women and children, I expect you to reciprocate, to do the same.
Mm.
So to me, what I'm doing is the obvious from my perspective.
Right.
Side remark, 14 months later, after I said this to this member of the Knesset, I went back to Israel to show Israelis the videos emerging from Sweda in South Syria, which was similar to what happened on October 7th. So when I told her, if the same happens to us, I expect you to reciprocate, I didn't imagine that this was indeed going to happen in Syria, and Israel was the only country on the planet to intervene to stop jihadists from slaughtering the Druze. But I think I know what you mean, because I always, when I'm introduced, people thank me, because they're kind, because they want to express their gratitude. And I always make the same comment, and people think I'm joking. I say, maybe I'm brave, as you said it, or our standards are too low. It is such a strange or unusual position to have, speaking of my position,
yes, of course,
that it shocks people and moves them to tears.
Yes.
Let me share a story with you.
Sure.
I was part of the first Arab delegation to the International March of the Living in Auschwitz. And that was after the signing of the Abraham Accords. For the first time, there was an Arab delegation walking together with the Jews from around the world. And a reporter, an Israeli reporter from I-24, a huge guy, wanted to interview me. So he was talking to his cameraman. And they realized that I'm wearing the Magen David, the Star of David, around my neck. So they were talking to one another in Hebrew. And then he asked me, they stopped. They're like, why? So I explained a bit what I feel, what I think about Israel. And he had tears in his eyes. And he said, can I shake your hand? I'm like, of course. And then he was emotional. He's like, can I hug you? I'm like, of course. And then he had tears in his eyes. And that bothered me.
Yes.
I didn't understand why.
That's the essence of my question.
That's why I'm sharing this story in particular.
Mm.
I didn't understand why this bothered me so much. And as I was leaving Auschwitz, I understood why. I was thinking, this Israeli Jewish guy is used to people telling him, you filthy Jew. And had I said this, he would have shaken that off.
Yeah.
They're used to it.
Mm.
He was moved to tears, a huge man, because I told him, I love you. Because he realized, I support you. I stand by your side. And that is what bothered me, because it became the new normal that we're all bigots. And I am this gem coming from this Arab world who tells the Jews and the Israelis, I love you. And I understand you're not perfect. When people want to highlight the imperfections in Israel, when Arabs show me a picture of a soldier breaking the arm of a Palestinian kid, I do tell them, Israel has jails, and they're not meant only for Palestinian terrorists. The Nazis wanted to convince the entire world that all the Jews, including their babies, are monsters. The Palestinian camp today, or the pro-Palestine camp, demands of the Jews to behave like angels. Well, they're neither angels nor demons. They're normal people. Among them are the deranged and criminals. They are normal people.
Absolutely, and that is the reality of it. And it's just so interesting to hear your perspective. Has there been what has been the personal cost to you of this journey?
So, on October 8th, my first reaction, this shock came out in words. I wrote something and published it in Times of Israel. And that resulted with all my family and most of my friends, including Christians, including academics who live abroad, who hate jihadists. Everybody blocked me. So I lost a lot of friends. But meanwhile, at least my family members, they all unblocked me. We're not best of friends, but many of them understand why I do what I do. And when you talk about personal cost, people curse, insult, send me death threats. I grew up in the Middle East. I have thick skin. It takes a lot to make me cry. Plus, after visiting Israel for 16 times, after talking to people who truly lost things that can never be replaced, I do not think that the price I'm paying is high at all, especially with the gratitude I receive wherever I go around the world, and especially after being to Israel so many times, because I'm not exaggerating if I say that I have thousands of friends, and I have a huge, huge family. I mean it. So I do not think I lost anything. On the contrary, I lost a few friends and I made many more. And that contributed to help me see things clearer. That gives me the energy I need to keep fighting. Again, I'm not doing the Israelis a favor. I cannot say this enough times.
Yeah, and I think
we do this because we owe it to our children and grandchildren. What is the world you want to live in? There is literally an Islamic conquest, a global Islamic conquest. Do you want an Islamist dictating what your daughter wears? If not, join our club. Roll your sleeves and get to work.
So why do you think people don't see that? There has to be cognitive dissonance. If this is happening around you, you see what happens in certain parts of the world, yet media, whether it's from New York to South Africa, is not calling out the danger. It's black or white. It's one or the other. Mm. There's no nuance.
It's self-destructive hatred. I think many deliberately ignore the elephant in the room because they're biased, and that is self-destructive hatred, let alone that we realized after October 7th, after anti-Semitism surfaced, that global academia, humanity departments were infiltrated and often set up to push an agenda that we're just seeing now unfold. But the young students truly think they are supporting the underdog, the Palestinian, the poor, oppressed Palestinians. But many are professional anti-Semites pushing an agenda. At the end of the day, it is not your average LGBTQ, I don't know, someone confused about their sex, who's going to win the battle if they can live in a world where the Jew doesn't exist anymore. It is the Islamist who carries a gun and who he knows exactly what he wants his world to look like. But at the same time, many are confused. Before October 7th, in Germany, in the city where I live, a professor from Birzeit University in, what am I going to call it, in the so-called West Bank, a German professor called Helga Baumgarten, her nickname on X Twitter was Hamas Helga.
No.
For good reasons.
Right.
Oh, she's the
so that's pretty clear.
Biggest advocate of Hamas.
Mm-hmm.
And she introduced a very, very interesting point. She gave a talk and she told the Germans, the audience, why do you think that you need to liberate women in Gaza? That was before October 7th. I live in Palestine. I know that those women love to wear the headscarf. They are happy. It is their culture. And when she finished with her rubbish, saying that Hamas are politicians, that they are nice, and that she was best friends with some of their leaders, I raised my hand because the man who invited her also a bigot, German, mm-hmm. belonging to the radical left, whatever is left from that era of the 60s and the 70s. When I came in, he knew that I was half Syrian, half Lebanese, so he assumed that I fit the stereotype. So when I raised my hand, he gave me the mic. Please go ahead, ma'am. Mm. So I told her, Professor Helga, it's an insult to my family. You come here, tell that we love to wear the headscarf in the Middle East. Well, nobody in my family wears the headscarf. And those who do, do not wear it voluntarily. Shame on you. You're coming here to say, we like this culture? Those friends you made are males. Stop it. How condescending. How absolutely rude. How evil and vile. Mm. Exactly. Mm. But many in the West love to West Plain or Man's Plain.
Yes.
Unbelievable. They tell us what our culture is like. You're like, dude, what are you talking about? I speak Arabic and Hebrew. I've lived in four Arab countries, and I've been to Israel more than 10 times. You've never visited the Middle East, and you are telling me that I'm a paid propagandist, that I do not know what I'm talking about. And more than that, the leftists among many European journalists accuse me of being indifferent to the suffering of the children in Gaza. How rude. I was one of those children. Mm, I grew up in war.
Absolutely.
I can relate.
Well, it's fascinating because it's almost a mirror of what's happened here in South Africa, where a plane load arrives of people from Gaza, and the claim is that this is part of Israel's plan to depopulate the area. So removing all agency from the people who have paid mm-hmm. money mm-hmm. to be able to leave the area and find a better life. The South African government and NGOs here saying, "Ha, no, this is a problem." In other words, what? They must stay there? They must stay in the area. We must lock them in because this is part of Israel's plan. But the people themselves
keep them hurt Israel.
Yes, because they have and they have no agency.
Insane. So you said very important things. First, any sane person, even a child, would understand if you're sitting on a plane, somebody paid for it. Look for the person who paid
absolutely.
For that, a chartered plane. Mm. Second, I heard that someone here in South Africa claimed that the dilemma is caused by the Israelis because they did not stamp their passports. Pemet, I've been to Israel 16 times. My passport was never stamped. Why? Because there are countries that would never receive you if you have that stamp. So the Israelis do not stamp your passport for your sake. And this is common, not against the Palestinians. The world does not rotate around the Palestinian cause. But also, this point of agency. I suggest, wherever I speak, to those who like the Palestinians, especially when they ask about, so what is the solution? Mm. The solution begins when the world stops infantilizing the Palestinians. If you care about them, respect them. They're not senile, they're not dumb, they're not children. They're capable. Hold them accountable. 100%. Accountable for what? You think they're senile or stupid? On October 7th, they showed us that they are capable, they are capable of a lot. That orchestrated, perfectly executed plan that those who support their kind of resistance brag about showed us that they are capable. The problem is how they use their resources and capabilities. Now we're going to hold them accountable. Why? Because we care about the children in Gaza. We're going to tell them, sweethearts, as you are capable and you caused quite the balagan, the catastrophe in Gaza, mm-hmm. now we're going to hold you accountable. But you've proved yet again, one more time, that you're neither safe for your children nor fit for governing. Here we draw the line. Many peoples around the world would love to have a state. I know that I'm perceived as a hardliner when I speak about this specific point. Many peoples, more than 50 million Kurds, they were promised a land after the fall of the Ottoman Empire, mm-hmm. and they deserve to have a land because they have an ancient culture,
100%.
An ancient civilization. Unlike Palestinianism, that is the invention of the 60s, thanks to the KGB and a crazy terrorist called Yasser Arafat, who's often compared with Nelson Mandela.
No.
How rude, how disrespectful. So we need to tell the Palestinians, sweethearts, enough already. Enough is enough. They always opt for terrorism. Okay, they don't like the term. They always opt for violence and they lose. And innocent, uninvolved civilians pay the price for the decisions of their leaders who are either terrorists or corrupt, or I'll add the third option, both. Enough already. You cannot govern. You shouldn't govern. You're irresponsible. And you never apologize for what you've done to your own people. So people think, maybe the solution is the PA, the Palestinian Authority. Seriously, do you know the system called pay for slay? Mm-hmm. Do you know that terrorists are rewarded when they kill or try to kill a Jew, an Israeli? Do you know that the moderate Palestinian Authority paid Hamas terrorists who were involved in the attack on October 7th or continues to pay their families? Do you know what that does? You don't have to care about the Israelis. You don't have to care about them. But when you promised, when you commit to a payment, you're telling your youth that that is a way to achieve, especially when they parade your body as a martyr, as a shaheed when you die. You tell them that this is an achievement. Kill an Israeli or kill yourself, then you'll become a hero. You're literally using them as fuel for your cause. Now, I don't think this is a decent thing to do.
No, it certainly
doesn't. It's about time we stop.
And certainly that's about agency, holding people accountable. Lots and lots of messages. Before I forget, will you just share your social media handles?
Of course. So to follow me, you will go on Instagram, for example.
Yeah, this crew's either Instagram or Facebook.
Let's only give
let's
you
do Instagram.
Instagram, mm-hmm. Rawan Osman, R-A-W-A-N Osman, O-S-M-A-N 2024. You will find the same. That is linked to my Facebook.
Okay, that's perfect.
For the older generation, yes. My age and above.
I was just going to say, you know, they judge us for Facebook. What, you've still got Facebook?
Yes, we do.
I do.
Exactly.
That's just what we've learned.
It's actually my most active page.
Really?
Facebook.
Okay, it makes sense.
Let's bring Facebook back.
Exactly. Hashtag bring Facebook back, Mukundi. Do you even have Facebook, Mukund? Do you?
No.
He's laughing.
I know. That's what I'm saying. Senna, you do, though.
I do, because I follow...
because I follow old people.
If you didn't do the job you do, would you have Facebook?
No.
Okay.
It is so
insulting. Okay, no offense.
Yeah,
no
exactly.
Offense.
You know what? We're moving straight on. You're talking about your new family. Tell me about your new South African family, because you've been here. You have been incredibly busy. You have met a lot of people.
So I'm going to say, and I'm not proud of it, before I came here, when people said South African, I'm like, cringe, anti-Semites, cringe. Mm. Especially that I know that the government, or this is the reputation, that
yes,
the government
sure.
is very corrupt, yet they have the audacity to lecture Israel. Everyone says, South Africa, after suffering from apartheid, getting rid from apartheid, they are leading the case. The international case against Israel, give me a break. But then I came here and I was surprised how friendly, how lovely the people are. And every Jew I spoke to made sure to make a distinction. They tell me, no. The South African people are amazing. The government or parts of the government is corrupt. And they say that it's a very poor representation of South African culture. Especially that South Africa indeed got rid of an apartheid.
Mm-hmm.
So my
And that comes back, that circles back to our word, our use of words, yes. Jew, apartheid,
words,
genocide.
Mean things, mean things. What apartheid? Please, whoever can, invite your friends who know everything about Israel to go and visit Israel. They'll be surprised. They'll be shocked. Look, I've spoken to many Israeli Arabs who are very proud of their Israeli identity. I also spoke to many cuckoos who tell me I'm a Palestinian citizen of Israel. What does that mean, darling? What does that mean? If you have an Israeli passport, you're Israeli. If you don't want to be an Israeli, if you're ashamed, if you loathe the Israeli culture identity, give back your passport. Move to an Arab country. When I had a problem with the countries, the Arab countries I lived in, I moved to Europe. I've been living in Europe for 15 years. And now, when I crave the Middle East summer, the sun, the culture, the food, I go to Israel. Your last Lebanon, your last Syria. So my experience so far, to go back to South Africa, is that this country has a lot of potential. It is a shame that when people, many in the West, hear South Africa, they cringe. You have the ability. Yesterday I spoke to a Christian crowd. Wow. Young students who are interested, who asked me for references. If we want to educate ourselves about the Palestinian cause, what do we do? What do we read? So I gave them references. Israeli historians and Palestinian historians and neutral European ones or American ones. And I found it fascinating that they are interested.
That's brilliant.
And they are not Jewish.
Yeah.
They're not Arab. They're not Muslim. But this is what you should do before you form a strong opinion. Because this melodrama, taking a kaffiyeh and going on the street and shouting and breaking things and public property, does not help.
The Greta Thunberg approach to performative.
Performative, and it does not help the children in Gaza. Look what this, the level of craziness we've reached. Liberals or active supporters of the pre-Palestine camp would rather send children back to Gaza, to an active war zone, practically inhabitable, to hurt Israel, to score against the Israelis, instead of saying, open your borders, welcome them. What can we offer you? You need a clean bed. You need to recover. You need therapy. You need a hug. You need vocational training. You need to integrate. You need to develop prospects for your future, for your children. Fall in love. Have children. Not become a martyr. Not die.
It is incredible. We do need to wrap up, but I want to ask you one message. If when leaving South Africa, there's one message that you need or would love people here to hear, what is that message?
Especially that we are sitting in Johannesburg, that we're speaking from South Africa. Words have meanings. For the Palestinians and their supporters to use the word apartheid so lightly is offensive. So you are a huge population and you need to claim this word back. You need to go, those who can, on social media and explain what apartheid truly is. It cannot, the word cannot change and morph to fit the agenda of the pre-Palestine camp. This doesn't help anybody. And when words lose their meanings, we are confused. Even morality, even good and bad become relative. We cannot afford it. And as you are a huge country, and many of you know the pain, the agony this country went through, help us explain to the world that what's happening in Israel is very, very problematic. But it is not an apartheid. People should not be allowed to use this word. It's misrepresentative and it damages your own history, and this should not be allowed.
Absolutely right. That is where we leave it, Rowan Osman. I can't tell you how many messages we have received just thanking you again and saying how absolutely riveting it is. It's been an honor. an absolute honor to chat to you, to hear this perspective, to be able to share this perspective with our listeners. And I wish you all the success in the future.
Thank you. You cannot imagine how happy I am to discover that there is a huge and vibrant Jewish community here, that in spite of everything, you are active. You have a radio station.
We do.
What does that tell the world? Am Yisrael Chai. You can keep trying.
Indeed, we can.